call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order, and we have a quorum to conduct business. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:08 a.m. on Tuesday, April 10th, 2018. Present today, we have Representative Ortiz, Representative Pruitt, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Seaton, Representative Tilton, Representative Gren, and Representative Thompson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. Before we start, just a reminder, if folks could please mute their cell phones. And at this meeting today, we will have one bill before the committee, and that is HB 339, which is an increase to the base student allocation. And so with that, I would like to call up Representative Guerra and his aide, Michelle Seideman, to the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Les Guerra, District 20 from Anchorage.
And I'm Michelle Seideman, staff to Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Guerra. I just want to let folks know if maybe committee members could hold their questions until the end of the presentation, and that's all. Thank you, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to go through the PowerPoint as quickly as possible because there are a lot of people here to testify. I'll certainly be around to ask questions, answer questions later. So there are two issues that have come up on education this year. One is early funding, and the lack of early funding we know demoralizes teachers. And then there's adequate funding, and the lack of adequate funding demoralizes parents. And what we don't want is for parents to leave the state not seeing a commitment to public education. It's not really just about money. This bill would increase education funding by $100 per student, or roughly 1.7%. Over the past many years, you can say funding has been flat. There have been years where it's gone down, especially in 2016. There was a major cut, and then it's been relatively flat since. And as Dr. Miller says from Juno, they've tried to use their general fund balance to survive the last couple years. They're now being forced to consider severe cuts. A lot of schools have told us they've been using their reserves to try and cushion the blow, and many of them are very close to out of reserves. Funding is down about $17 million since 2015. There was funding that was supposed to continue in 15, 16, and 17. The funding in 16 and 17 from the bill that passed in 2014 was deleted from the budget, which explains some of these bars. So in 2015, there was $43 million in additional to the BSA that was in the budget, and then that was supposed to remain in smaller amounts in the next 2 years, but that money was disappeared in FY16 and FY17. Those funds were distributed just as BSA funds were distributed. If you count for inflation, from 2015, funding is down by roughly $90 million. If you count the money that was distributed through the BSA, but it wasn't in the BSA. So what are the impacts on schools? It's not really just about money. This year, Fairbanks, if we get flat funding, will lose another 50 positions. They've lost 231 positions since 2009. That impacts education. In Anchorage, we've lost since 2003 almost 400 positions, many of whom have been teachers, career counselors, guidance counselors. Classroom sizes have increased. That's not a surprise. The same is the case in school districts, and especially in the larger school districts. Things that you don't really count, that you don't notice, is special education enrollment is up. Intensive needs enrollment is up. And even though we talk about inflation, we know the cost of health care goes up faster than inflation, and that's a real cost for school districts, which results in more cuts. We had one teacher come to us and say, you know, her science class had gone up to 28 students, and that was too much for her. And then when she came back to school this year, it was 32 students. And she said that was what crossed the Rubicon. That's where she felt she couldn't teach to students individually anymore. And that's the standard, really, in education. Do you have enough time to teach to the student, not just to a group of classes? In Juneau, the budget reductions have been very significant. They're facing a $3.5 million deficit this year. They've already lost close to 100 positions, and those losses are going to continue this coming year if we don't do something more than flat funding. In the MATSU, they've had an interesting issue. Their student counts have gone up, so they have some of the highest class sizes they've ever had, especially in high school. but class students have gone up, and they have not been able to hire the teachers to sort of meet the need of students. So it hasn't been so much teacher cuts as much as it's been with the increasing number of students. They haven't had the teachers to keep classrooms stable. In Nome, they expect to lose about 10 positions next year. They've lost positions in the past. They're talking about eliminating summer school and cuts to activities. On the Kenai and Kodiak, it's been a loss of positions for the last few years, and they will all lose positions next year. Flat funding, according to the business manager in Kodiak, means bigger class sizes and fewer options for students. It's just the reality of what happens when you go through this long-term period of flat and reduced funding for schools. In the Lake and Peninsula Borough, it's really not just about urban schools. The story's a little bit different in rural Alaska. In the Lake and Peninsula Borough, they've just had to cut 20 school days out of the year. The superintendent there is very concerned about even core services at this point. We're cutting to the bone in many of our school districts. In some Bristol Bay communities, they're starting to combine classes, which is something they don't want to do, but school districts are trying everything they can to minimize the loss of teachers. What do? You lose music and art, and that's not just a Bristol Bay thing. It's a Kenai Peninsula thing, too, where music classes have been cut back. And you don't want to just teach the three R's to students. You want to make education something that is interesting and inspiring for students. In Sitka, they're facing an increase in class sizes with flat funding again. The story is very much the same as in other places. We've got a BP teacher of the year who says she and her husband are thinking about leaving the state. They don't see a future in education in Alaska. And I hate to say it, but that's many of you have spoken to parents who say the same thing. So class sizes up, the number of students they have to teach are up, and they really don't feel the support coming from the legislature at all. So we're also possibly losing our best teachers, and that's not the way to move forward. A teaching assistant in Anchorage, Jen Huvar, has talked about how she feels we've reached a tipping point. In Wrangell, you no longer offer 3 years of foreign language, which then has an impact on college applications. We can say, look, we've got a fiscal plan in the state, and 60 of us probably have a different way to solve it, but we haven't, and you can't ask a student to wait for adults to get their act together. They can't just come back and take fourth grade just because we haven't gotten our fiscal plan together today. So academic opportunity lost today is lost tomorrow as well. These are some of the school districts that support HB 339. They are school districts from across the state. These are some of the additional organizations that support the BSA bill, including the Alaska Association of School Boards. And with that, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair, try to go through that as quickly as possible. Can certainly answer questions, this is what students have to say, and now you'll hear what the folks in the audience have to say, unless there are some questions.
Great. Thank you, Representative Guerra. So before we go to public testimony, I'd like to open it up to committee questions. Representative Wilson?
Thank you. And if we could just get the chart, because a dollar is not a dollar, so it's not $100 per student. It depends upon what school district you're in and how large the school is. And I notice in the packet you have how much more there would be to each school district, but I would be curious on, you know, what the student population has been, but the per student in each of the different school districts. I know it's an average, but I'm just talking about a regular student, not getting into special education, because that, again, has a whole different formula. But if we could just get a chart for all the districts, what it will mean per student, because that's very different than. I just want to make sure people understand that it's not $100 per student. It depends upon where you live. And for Anchorage, it's actually less than $100 per student because of the formula.
Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
We'll ask the Department of Education if they can get that information to you. Obviously, the foundation formula has a multiplier for some of the smaller schools and rural schools.
Well, and Mr. Chair.
Representative Wilson.
And actually, you don't even get a full student for some of the larger schools. So it actually goes in the reverse. If you have over a couple hundred students in your school, they won't even get the full benefit. So it goes both directions. For the smaller schools, get a little bit more, but some of the larger schools actually get like 0.75%, get 75% of the BSA, not the other. But I'll wait for the information from the department.
We'll see how quickly we can get that. Thanks.
Great, thank you. Do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions, we'll go ahead and start with public testimony. For anybody who may be watching online, if you would like to submit public testimony via email, you can do so by emailing us at housefinance@akleg.gov. There are no spaces in housefinance@akleg.gov. And so with that, I'm going to, as much as possible, try to take up names here in the order in which they signed up, starting with the earliest. And so let's see here at the Juno LIO, and or actually here in the room, Monica Goyette, are you here? And we've got quite a few people who would like to testify. So maybe if we could ask folks to keep their testimony to 2 minutes, and if you'd like to submit your testimony, if you've got more than 2 minutes, if you could do that. And so as each person comes up, if you could just put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony. So Ms. Goyette, thank you for being here.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Monica Goyette. I'm the superintendent in the Mat-Su Borough School District. This is my 20th year in education. Our district is a very large district geographically. We have 47 schools with 19,000 students, and our budget is about $250 million. $232 is our general operating fund, and then we get federal grant funding on top of that. The cost of doing business, our simple rollover budget from 1 year to the next, the cost of doing budget with additional salary steps that are negotiated, health insurance costs, energy costs, is $7 million more. So this year, to operate at flat funding, it means that we have to reduce our current services by $7 million. Last year, or this fiscal year that we're currently in, was the first year that we were unable to use reserve balance, fund balance, to close this fiscal deficit. So in this year that we're in, we had to cut 87 employees. Next year, we will be raising our PTR again. Our high school class sizes will be 33 to 1, high school 30 to 1, and our elementary will average at 25. Average PTR, though, does not mean that that's what the number is in every single classroom. So for us, one of our big achievements this year was that we had every single kindergarten class under 30 students. I don't know if you remember when your child was 5 and invited students over, or kids over, to a birthday party. I'm assuming 10 was the limit, and after 2 hours, you needed them to go home. So 30 5-year-olds in a classroom with one teacher, no aides, is just increasingly difficult. And each year, we're running into these accumulative cuts. One thing I think that everybody can agree on in Alaska right now is the rising cost of health care. Health care is our second largest cost driver at $40 million. 2 years ago in April, we're with the Public Employee Health Trust, we had a 25% increase on our health insurance rate. We received that in April. This year, our health insurance rates that just came out were an 8 to an 11% increase. So health insurance has really compounded our issue of funding over the last year. Thank you.
Perfect timing. Thank you. Ms. Goyette, we may have questions of the committee. Representative Wilson, did you have a question? No. Are there any questions of the committee? Seeing none, thank you for flying in. Appreciate it. The next person we have in the room here is Jack Walsh. Jack, and if you could also put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. For the record, I'm Jack Walsh. I'm the superintendent of the Craig School District in Southeast Alaska. We're a district that serves 500 students on a daily basis. 300 come to our schools in Craig, and another 250 about 250 are in each program, but 250 are in a correspondence program that's statewide and serves students throughout our state. I signed up right after Dr. Goyette, and one of the interesting things is that her challenge next year of the, $7 million if we're flat funded is my budget. And so one of the things that I would say to you is that while our challenges aren't the same, I have very similar challenges. I was just told that my health insurance rates are going to go up between 8 and 11%, and that's going to complicate things for us. You know, along with everything else that goes on, we have utility costs and things like everybody else that regularly rise and present challenges to the district. I only have 35 teachers on my staff, so I won't be cutting large numbers of teachers. However, I am going to eliminate one position next year, and I'm also going to eliminate one administrative position, which will put a greater load on the administrators that are left there in the district. And, you know, and I guess that the piece that I wanted to say is that having worked in the state for a long time and in different districts of different sizes, I know that this impacts everybody in different ways. So some very unique challenges come into it. But, you know, a $100 increase to the base student allocation would mean about $85,000 to my district. As I opened up conversations with my board about our budget for next year, we were going to be somewhere between $150,000 and $200,000 in the hole to try to operate all the same programs. So that $85,000 would help us. Another challenge that we don't always talk to at these meetings is that I'm also losing a federal grant that I've had for a number of years, and that's applied $400,000 a year over the last 3 years to support reading interventions, math interventions, and to support some other very important work that our students need. And as that goes away, you know, it's not easy to tell parents, well, we just lost the money and there's nothing we can do. We've got to find some ways to address that. So I really appreciate your time and consideration, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. We've got a question from Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Walsh, for being here today and being a close neighbor of mine living in Ketchikan. It's a pleasure to see you here today. My question for you, on that federal grant, it was just a discontinued grant. Could you tell me what that grant was specifically named, or what was it about, what it was about?
Sure, through the chair, Representative Ortiz. The federal grant was an Alaska Native Education grant, and a lot of our districts are able to access those because of our Native population. And these are grants that, as an example, this year there's no grants going to be even offered. So where we've wrote the grant three different times successively and got funding for 9 years in a row, now it's gone away. We hope in the future it'll come back, but you know, we're seeing less opportunities to go after grants to try to enhance and supplement our program. So that's what this grant was about.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Thank Walsh. Just a reminder, we have folks both in the room and online who are wanting to testify, and I'll be taking these in the order in which folks signed up as much as possible. So Mr. John Conwell here in the room, if you could also put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Conwell. I'm superintendent with the Unalaska City School District. I've been with the district for 21 years, been in the state teaching for 25 years or as a administrator. Again, I share many of the same concerns as my colleagues. School district very similar in size to Craig. Unalaska has two schools, 400 students. 70% of our students speak or hear a language other than English at home. 25% of our students come to school every day not speaking any English. So we have some significant challenges. Our budgeting process in my district has been very much like the state's. It's kind of a microcosm of the state. We have been drawing on our reserves. We're doing everything we can to maintain positions and programs. But unfortunately, we've had to cut about 10% of our teaching and support staff over the last 4 years. That's included an ESL teacher, our art teacher, a couple of elementary classroom teachers, our school nurse, our elementary librarian, and the list goes on. We still manage through the generosity of our city to maintain many programs and continue to perform well as a district. But it's getting more and more difficult. This this House Bill 339 with the $100 increase to the BSA would go a long way toward helping us start backfilling some of the programs and services that our children rely on and their parents rely on. So I would encourage you to support this bill, and I thank you for your time and this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Mr. Conwell, we've got a question from Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Conwell, you mentioned at the beginning of your comments you have a high population of students where English is not their primary language. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What was that percentage again?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that's about 70% of our students that come from homes that speak a language other than English, but may speak some English and come to school and are functional. But about 25% of our students are identified through the state's English language assessment as needing some sort of specialized services.
Follow up. And you mentioned that you have lost one ESL teacher. So do you have any ESL staff remaining?
Yes, I have one ESL specialist who we share between the buildings.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions? Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what's your graduation rate? I know what it was a few years ago when I was there.
Last year it was 100%.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And let's see, just a reminder, if folks are watching, they can submit written testimony to House Finance at akleg.gov. The next person in the room here is Scott McManus. If you could put your name and affiliation on the record.
Thank you, Chairman Foster. My name is Scott McManus. I'm the superintendent of Alaska Gateway School District, where I've been the super there for the last 2 years. I'm a product of Alaska schools. I grew up in Northwest Arctic. I graduated from the University of Alaska, went to Fairbanks, Anchorage, and I believe that nothing is more important in this state than the education of our youth. Education shouldn't be viewed as a cost. It should be viewed as an investment. I found out last night from our business manager that our insurance costs for our health care premiums are going to go up 9%, 9.3%. That's going to cost us $115,000 on top of $1.2 million that we spend already on health care. And so our total cost next year for 55 employees that get health care is going to be about $1.35 million. We can't give health care to our classified employees who are so important to the consistency in our schools because they don't change like the certified staff often do. We're a district that's on the road system, and we don't have the high turnover rate that a lot of other school districts experience, which we appreciate. But we do have a high turnover in our classified staff because we just can't afford them the benefits that make the difference, that will keep them working for us. So we struggle with that issue, how we can afford some sort of benefits to them that make working for the school district competitive. We just gave our teachers a 2% raise this year because we basically have to, because otherwise we're not going to be able to attract them. I went down to the job fair in Anchorage, and I think there were less than 200 applicants at the job fair. There were many more jobs than there were applicants. Because we're not competitive anymore. And I went down to the Portland job fair down there. I built it into a personal mini vacation so the district didn't have to pay for that. And attended the Oregon Educator Expo, which was the day before the Alaska job fair in Portland. At the Oregon Educator Expo, there were 1,600 young, energetic, excited teachers waiting in line for several hundred school districts looking for positions with jobs that started at 00, meaning the no experience, bottom line education, bachelor's, associate's degree, $59,000 a year is what they start at. We just gave a raise to our staff, and we're able to get our starting salary up over 50. And that's just, if you're a young teacher trying to decide where you're going to go, where you're going to live, and you don't have a connection to Alaska, they look at that, and that makes a difference. When you look, when you ask teachers for, when they ask you about the retirement package, which is teachers are more and more financially savvy, they want to know what we can offer. Thank you very much. I'll submit the rest of this in writing.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. Are there any questions from the committee? I don't see any. Thanks for coming in from, I believe, Tok. Next person in the room here, Mr. Jeff Dieter. And if you could put your name and your affiliation on the record.
My name is Jeff Dieter. I'm an Alaska Gateway School District board member. I represent three villages, Dot Lake, Tanacross, and Mentasta. I'm also a graduate of our village school in Dot Lake. My wife and I are the parents of three graduates of our school in Dot Lake. We are also blessed to be adoptive parents to two wonderful children, ages 5 and 10, who are currently enrolled in that same school. My wife is currently a paraprofessional at our school and will also finish her teaching degree in 16 days, so I'm tremendously excited about that, and I'm sure she's even more. I've also taught for 13 years, with 6 of those as principal or administrator in the lower 48. I want to first of all thank you for your work in this legislative session. I've been down as a board member different times, sat in some of the offices of people that I see here, and it's a I see light at the end of the tunnel, and that's due to the tremendous work that you all have done down here in Juneau. I believe that one of the best things that government can do is to eliminate uncertainty, and the discussion that I hear about forward funding, that's reassuring. As Scott McManus and I were talking just last night, we received word that we had our health insurance premium increased, and there goes basically for us if we were to increase the BSA, that takes that. Those uncertainties that we'll deal with for the next 2 years, it can be alleviated and helped in a tremendous sense by increasing the BSA. I'm sure that if the legislature had their way, they would fully fund this and would love to see this the uncertainty eliminated. So from a macro perspective, without going into all the details about how that affects Alaska Gateway School District, I would encourage the $100 increase to the BSA in order to eliminate some of those uncertainties and the costs that we may incur over the next 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dieter. Does the committee have any questions? I don't see any, so thanks for flying in.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Mike Hanley here in the room. And if you could also put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the I am the superintendent for Old Habits. I'm the superintendent for the Tugatch School District. And one thing that I have found that in my shift to working directly with the school district is that my perspective really hasn't changed, and yet I still have this vision of what it means to our state. And one thing I learned while I was down here is that our schools operate in the most challenging social situations in the country. We lead the country in child abuse and neglect, domestic violence, alcohol abuse, and my colleagues behind me lead the charge in helping address those. And before we can educate our children, we have to help them address those challenges, and they do an amazing job. The Chugach School District has always been known, prior to me even coming there, as being innovative. And one of the things that we have found increasingly effective and essential at this time is to partner with other school districts, recognizing that my 400 students, being one of the smaller districts in the state, requires the opportunities that other districts have. And we have a program, a variable term residential program, that we bring kids in from other districts so that they can access opportunities at our school to receive culinary trades, construction trades, get driver's license, ETT certification. We do that across the board. Unfortunately, just the cost of travel so that our kids can access those resources from small communities to make that connection to real life and to their futures, just the travel alone is putting the stress now on our districts to where those programs will probably have to start to fall aside, and our students are now kind of relegated back to their small communities and what we can offer in the smaller setting. And that's a tragedy because those are the things that are providing an impact for our kids. Those kids that take part in CTE education, stay in school longer, perform at a higher rate, graduate at a higher rate. And we're finding in our school district, like you're hearing in others, as we have to tighten our belts, we're not able to bring those kids in and access those. So both from my perspective now as a superintendent and also from my previous view at the state level, a $100 BSA increase, a $25 million investment is, in the scope of things, is a very smart investment from the state's perspective and will have a positive impact on all of our districts.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hanley. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Do we have any questions from the committee? We've got two questions. I'd also like to note that we're joined earlier by Representative Guttenberg. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good to see you back here. I just want to, seeing as we have a room full of superintendents, point out that one of the most educational things that I've done in a long time is do a legislator in a classroom. It was, you know, hanging out around a school and talking with kids, but to sit in a classroom by a teacher's side as she goes through a lesson plan and looking at the kids and who's learning and who's not and who didn't get enough sleep and who doesn't have enough food are considerable enlightening aspects of doing that. Now, Representative Ortiz, it just comes out of that environment, but it's very, it's and I've done it a few times, and I enjoy doing it, and I did one just last year in Fairbanks dealing with curriculum and the use of computers and new ways of keeping track of everybody, and we can talk about it in an intellectual way, but sitting in a classroom, watching it and seeing it was something that you guys should keep extending out to us.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
And we've got a question from Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I probably could have asked this of other folks. The school district superintendents have been saying that what is taking the majority of their increase is health care costs. So, you know, I've been talking with you and others for a while about that experience of care is what drives that in your insurance rates, individual insurance rates per district. And so do you have a specific program at all of looking at avoidable costs and how to keep your teachers and your employees and their dependents healthier so that those costs, that experience won't drive your health care costs up?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, excuse me. The only one that we do have is a function of our insurance company, which provides some healthy advice and programs you can access, but nothing specific. It's more here's some good ways to stay healthy, especially since our communities are particularly rural. You know, we don't have club memberships and things like that, so it's more online resources that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And any further questions? I don't see any. Thank you, Mr. Hanley.
Thank you.
And we'll take another one from the room here. And in just following the order in which people signed up after that, we will move over to the Kenai LIO and the Offnets and let's see here, the Anchorage LIO, and then we'll come back to the room here. So with that, here in the room, Sean Egan. You could put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony. Thanks for coming.
Hello, my name is Sean Egan. I represent myself. I've got a sophomore and a senior at Juno Douglas High School, and I'm here to talk about pupil-teacher ratio, which I think is misleading. Whatever the PTR is right now, what my kids experience is this. My son takes world history. There's 40 kids in that class. There's only 39 seats. So they just rely on somebody not showing up. The English classes at Juno Douglas High tend to be in the 30 to 33 student ratio. And you might say a good teacher can control that many teachers, that many students. And that's true, but when it comes to assigning a three-page paper to write, and you've got 33 kids in each class times five classes, that's 165 different essays to read, which is 500 pages. And I feel the English teachers deal with this in two ways. Some of them have kind of stopped assigning writing assignments because they don't have the time to read 500 pages. And other ones assign writing assignments, but they don't actually get around to grading them. That's not a good way to learn to write. So there are some small classes. I shouldn't say there aren't. Metal shop, which my son took, is by law somehow capped at 15 because the machinery is dangerous. And I guess the school districts could eliminate metal shop and other shops, but if we're going to build a liquid natural gas pipeline, I want Alaska kids to weld that, to do that welding. We need shops. We need to build our infrastructure in this state. We cannot eliminate that type of class. And my daughter's actually in physics, and there's only 15 kids in that class. I'm not quite sure why. But I don't want all the design funds to go out of the state. If we want our kids to go to top-notch universities and get into engineering programs, those programs, including Anchorage, expect you to have physics in high school. So we have to keep physics. We have to keep shop. And if it's tough at Juno Douglas, I'm sure it's much tougher at all the remote schools that have even smaller staffs to do this. So I would like you to fix these problems, but if not, keep the funding up there so we can at least stay the same and not have this be worse. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Egan. Are there questions from the committee? I don't see any questions, so thanks for coming in. I'd also like to recognize that we're joined earlier by Representative Kawasaki. And so let us move over here to the Kenai LIO. Mr. David Brighton, if you're there, if you could put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Good morning. My name is David Brighton. I'm a father of three students at the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, a teacher, and a member of the Kenai Education Association. I'd like to thank you for offering this opportunity to testify, and thank you for your service to our state. I recognize that we're in difficult times financially as a state. We've experienced flat funding for 3 years now. And fortunately, our borough is looking at funding for the cap. Our mayor's talking about increasing education funding. Our school district is looking at spending even more of the fund balance that is dwindling quickly. But despite all of that, our school district has had to cut over $8 million in the last 2 years. We've cut programs. We're looking at combining multiple grades into elementary classes in some of our schools. My son at Kenai Central lost the option to take French. Most of the elementary schools don't teach art anymore. That was the thing that I enjoyed as a kiddo, being able to do art projects. And our elementary teachers are trying to do the best they can, but it's difficult to, in your classroom, provide a good art curriculum, like making things out of clay. One of the positions that we're looking at cutting right now is a district-wide art coordinator that helps bring some of those lessons to all of our kids. Last year, we had to make some cuts to our custodial staff, and teachers have been asked to pick up some of that slack, and we're team players, and we want to do that. But as class sizes increase and our duties do not change, teachers are feeling strapped, and picking up more of those things is just one more thing that we have to try to remember to do. here in Kenai, we have a self-funded insurance plan. We're doing everything we can to reduce the costs. We recently approved medical travel options so that we could save money. I don't like that idea. I like keeping our money local. I like supporting Alaska jobs. But the fact is, we only have so much money, and this is potentially going to be a real savings, and we're looking at everything we can do. We're looking at prescription costs. I was at our last committee meeting, we spent a half an hour talking about an option that would save $12,000 a year, which isn't very much, but we're doing everything we can to save money. An increase to the BSA would help mitigate many of these problems that we're experiencing. My youngest son will be in third grade next year, and he only gets one chance at third grade. That's a critical age, and I hope that we can give him the best education possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brighton. And does the committee have any questions for Mr. Brighton? I don't see any. So thank you for calling in from Kenai. Let's move over to the Anchorage LIO and then the off-nets and then back to the room here. So with that, we've got one person in the Anchorage LIO. Dina Mitchell, if you could put yourself on the record, your name, your affiliation, and then proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Good morning. My name is Dina Mitchell, and I am a member of Great Alaska Schools for quite a few years, as most of you know. I will also soon be an Anchorage School Board member. However, I am testifying on behalf of myself. You've heard some excellent testimony this morning, starting with Representative Guerra's outline of what's going on in the state with education funding. As you know, Great Alaska Schools has been, for the past few years, really beating the drum of having adequate and predictable funding and how helpful that is in terms of avoiding pink slipping, allowing the district and individual schools to be able to plan effectively because they know what kind of budget they're planning for. These cuts every year, as you've heard me say time after time, are very, very harmful to our students. The Anchorage School District is looking at a $13 million budget gap this year, and if this $100 million or $100 BSA increase is passed, and if it's passed soon, as you know, Anchorage has been incredibly generous and has given the maximum allowed in terms of local contribution. So if the $100 BSA increase was passed soon, we're looking at reducing that budget gap by about $9.1 million because our local contribution would be increased by $1.7 million. If the BSA increase is not passed soon, we're looking at a $7.4 million increase. It doesn't close the budget gap we have, but it certainly would go a long way to retaining some of the teachers, perhaps not making more counselor cuts and those types of things, all things that directly impact our students. So thank you so much for considering this.
And thank you, Ms. Mitchell. Do we have any questions of the committee? We've got a question from Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. I was wondering whether Anchorage is working on controlling its medical costs in the same way that the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District just talked about, and that is going out for all specialty work, going out to bid, whether it's California or those in network in Seattle. As well as Alaska, and have found that it's very cost efficient and cost saving for their members or dependents to travel outside to receive that, even in addition to paying the housing and the flight service. Has Anchorage considered anything like that for medical savings?
I know that the Anchorage School District is looking at all kinds of different opportunities for medical savings. And as you know, the union, the Education Association, has their own healthcare system. So I'm not exactly sure what they're doing there, but the Anchorage School District for non-AEA members has established the Vera Health Clinic. And for people who have started using that, they have very much liked that, and that should save money for our non-union non-AEA members. And I know that the union is looking at ways to reduce costs, but I don't know specifics. I'm sorry, but I can look into that and get back to you.
Okay, thank you. And I guess it is the Kenai Peninsula Education Association and that membership that is utilizing that. And so if anyone else has had experience and can give us any kind of percentage of cost savings that they're experiencing with that, that would be good information for us to have. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions for Ms. Mitchell? I don't see any, so thank you for calling in. Next up, we have the off-nets here, and Josh Keaton calling in from Juneau. If you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you for the opportunity to discuss the importance of House Bill 339. For the record, my name is Josh Keaton. I wear multiple hats in this community. I'm a citizen of Juneau, a parent, PTO officer, site council member. I'm also the vice president of the Juneau School Board, and also on board of directors for Association Alaska School Boards. I'm here primarily to urge you to strongly support increasing the BSA by $100. After having gone through a recent budget cycle here in the Juneau School District, faced with over 5 years of budget cuts, representing over $10 million, and then facing another $3 million, we have no reserves. We are to the bottom of the barrel. Over the past 5 years, we have cut administrative staff by 33%. We've cut teachers by over 10%, and we're looking at cutting more teachers right now. We have classrooms that exceed 30 students in the elementary schools, and it's impossible for those classes and those students to succeed to the level that they can. I testified before the Senate Finance Committee a couple days ago, and in order to keep this short, the quality of our education is really in your hands. We urge you to fund the $100 BSA, and I'm willing to take any questions if you like.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Keaton. Does the committee have any questions? I don't see any, so thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Ms. Dina Bishop, calling in from Anchorage, if you could put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello?
Yes, Ms. Bishop, if you could put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Dina Bishop, and I am the superintendent of the Anchorage School District. I do want to thank you for your courage to place House Bill 339 in front of the House Finance Committee, even in a time of fiscal unrest. Alaska needs this legislation to propel us into action. Today, more than any other, Alaskans must come together for what is important to us, our youth. This morning, the nation's report card reported that Alaska decreased in outcomes for fourth and eighth grade, leaving us dead last in reading achievement in grade four out of all the states and territories assessed in our nation. In my sector, we will be uncomfortable this morning and most likely begin to blame the results on the assessment, the NAEP. The business sector will begin to blame the schools for the lack of success and work-ready students. Government may blame the broken educational system in Alaska because education puts a pinch in the budget. We will all find ourselves looking for the source of blame rather than looking to seek answers. Today, more than ever, Alaskans must come together for what is important to us. Our youth. The revenue the Alaska legislature provides for Alaska schools is one of the highest in the nation. Yes, I said that, the highest. You already give in the top 10% of states, yet our outcomes have shown to be some of the lowest. Do not allow this to take away more. Rather, let this be a wake-up call for us all to invest. We Alaskans must come together and be discontented, unhappy, frustrated, and upset at our achievement, and begin to work together as lawmakers, administrators, teachers, community members, parents, and students to change the outcomes. The fact that Alaska actually costs more is no surprise, and it's not only true for education. Let's be honest. Alaska is more expensive to build roads, to provide health care, to entertain and eat out, to drill oil, and yes, to educate a child. The reality is that today we must come together and get serious about public education. It is a cornerstone to our democracy in the United States. And high-quality education is what will bring us to the top of our world's knowledge economy. This is a challenge that we must embrace. We have great educators. Support us in doing the hard work that must be done in our communities, in our schools, and in our classrooms. I make no excuse for the lack of our success. We all own this. You must know that ASD's focus for every child is for every child to learn at high levels and succeed. Anchorage will achieve this goal. The reality of my work is that it must start where students and families are presently, and that takes resources. The bills you are hearing have everything to do with the work in schools. Increased crime due to opioid addiction, I say we see that too. Highest rate of domestic violence, I say we see that too. Lack of mental health care, we see that too. Family stress due to lack of employment, we see that too. Food uncertainty, we see that too. Schools are a microcosm of our greater communities. Today more than ever, Alaskans must come together for what is important to our future, our youth. Parents must encourage educational attainment and assure our students get to school on time.
Ms. Bishop, teachers must engage please wrap up.
Students and ensure basic skills. Administrators must be responsible for effective and be effective school leaders. Local school boards must focus their work on accountability and learning. The business community must support their employees and hold education in high regard. And you, our legislators, must see the education our youth is paramount. Fund education for the outcomes you want and hold my colleagues and me accountable for the outcomes we desire. Let Alaska's last place
Ms. Bishop,
ranking
if
today
you could please wrap up.
Wake up call and motivate us. Today more than ever, we must come together for what's important. Support education funding in K-12 and university. Support House Bill 339. It's what we invest in that matters most, our youth. They're the ones that will build Alaska's future.
Ms. Bishop.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, but we just want to be fair to everybody, and we're wanting to make sure we give everybody an opportunity to testify. If folks would like to submit written testimony and they've got more testimony than they can fit in the 2 minutes, please feel free to submit that to housefinance@akleg.gov. Again, housefinance@akleg.gov. So with that, we have Mr. David Neese calling in from Anchorage. If you could put yourself on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yeah, hi, this is David Neese speaking for myself. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
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 All right, thank you. I would like to just go over a couple things. The bill sponsor mentions flat funding multiple times in his presentation, and when you're looking at one component of your education funding, which is the BSA, yeah, you're probably close on that one. From 2008 to 2018, it increased from $5,380 to $5,930. But your basic need, the amount of money that you're actually sending to your school districts, went up every year in the last 3 years from $1.49 billion to $1.515 billion to $1.523 billion. In your period, it went up 50% living by a large amount.
We're losing him.
Are you close to the telephone? We're losing you. Mr. Neese, can you hear
that's
us?
It. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, I can. All right, I'll let it go. Thank you. I'll send my testimony in writing.
Thank you, Mr. Neese. Next, we're going to go still stay on the telephones. We'll go to Laurel Jackson from the Delta Greeley School District. Laurel, are you there? Oh, here. Right.
Yeah.
Laurel, come on up.
That's funny.
We'll take Laurel and then Christy Hendrick right after Laurel.
Good morning. I'm not used to testifying in front of you. I have written several times, but I am Laurel Jackson. I'm the superintendent for the Delta Greeley School District. I've been with the Delta Greeley School District for more than 25 years as a teacher, a parent, and an administrator. And so I love my community and I love my district. I've also been a citizen of the state of Alaska for more than 30 years, so I love this state. And I understand the budget problem that we're facing. I also understand from all the testimony that you've heard this morning that my school district is in exactly the same situation as everyone else you've heard this morning. We've cut staffing by 18% over the last 4 years, from administrators right down to janitors. This year, I start out looking at my budget, and I ended up $240,000 in the hole, went back, revamped, cut, wherever we can, still $33,000 in the hole. This bill would provide the Delta Gurley School District with $170,000. That would be life-saving for us, because I'm now looking at going into negotiations with no money really to go into negotiations. And unlike some of the other districts that you've heard talk about health insurance, because of the unique structure of our negotiated agreement, that increase in health insurance will come straight out of my employees' pockets. It won't hit the school district. And yet when I go to negotiations, I have to look at those teachers and say, yeah, sorry, that's yours. You have to cover that. That's a cut in pay. That is a direct cut in their pay to pay that health insurance. And I don't think you want to solve this problem off the back of the workers. You know, we have a problem. But when you listen to all the testimony you've had this morning, except possibly the last call, which we couldn't quite hear, it tells you that this is a necessary increase in the BSA. And it really comes down to a question of, this is not something that you can't do. You can do this. The question is, will you? Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Does anybody have any questions? Representative Vartes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for your years of service in public schools. It's commendable. I heard some specific concerns from a few members of your organization in a meeting about the problem of unfunded mandates coming down from the state and causing a further dilution of resources directed towards meeting the needs of those mandates. Mm-hmm. Do you see that in your district as well as being a problem?
Well, the problem with mandates is that they are mandates, which means you have to do them. So what happens is we don't necessarily spend more money to complete the requirements that are placed upon us, but we don't do other things that would need to be done. And so, for example, we generally have 10 days of professional development. We have to devote a lot of that time now toward completing the required mandates instead of focusing on teaching strategies and how to best deal with the students in the classrooms that we have. So I can't quantify for you this is how much it's costing us. We're simply not doing other things.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Delta's in a little different place in the Fairbanks North Star Borough where we can have local contribution and you can't. If there was a mechanism that the state put in place without having to be a borough, I mean, but have that mechanism the same way that we do, do you think that would be something that the community would want to look at? And the state would have to make that. I mean, that would have to be a change. I understand that. But right now, you know, your residents don't have that opportunity. You know, how do you think that would, you know, go over?
Well, it depends on who you ask. The people that I work with, the school district personnel, most of the parents that I know of, and I think your own surveys indicate that the people of Alaska are willing to help pay for public education. And I know personally, tax me, it's fine.
And Mr. Chairman, that's just something we really haven't looked at. We've looked at other mechanisms, but we really haven't given the opportunity to those who are, you know, not in an organized area to still have that opportunity in some type of voluntary way. Where right now they don't, and their hands are kind of tied on that portion of the funding.
Mr. Jackson also said we haven't given them the opportunity to chip in towards the deficit. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I read in the past, and I'm not sure if they still do it, but the Pogo mine out there, my understanding is that they pay a payment in lieu of taxes, and that goes to the school district in Delta. Is that still true?
That was never true. The payment in lieu of taxes goes to the city of Delta Junction, which does not have to give any money to the school district.
Okay. Thank you.
I will say that Pogo has been a good donator to some of our extracurricular activities, though. We'll give them credit for that.
Thank you.
last words are my words, not Representative Wilson's words. So the next person we have, unless there are further questions, is Christy Hendrick. Then after Christy, Martin Stepperton.
Good morning. Thank you very much for letting me speak. My name is Christy Hendrick, and I represent myself. My remarks focus on the effects of increased PTR due to budget cuts primarily, but that's just kind of one part of the picture that I'm focusing on. I'm the parent of one elementary and one middle school student in the Juneau School District. I have pretty quickly prepared remarks, and I'm not a natural public speaker, so please bear with me. I work a part-time flexible job. In Juneau, this requires some sacrifices that will have long-term impacts for my husband and me. But this sacrifice allows me to be present for my children after school, to assist in their classrooms, and to be here today. Many, many parents do not have this privilege. I learn a great deal by having a presence in my kids' classes, and I encourage all of you to take time out to observe our teachers in a variety of settings. As a person who appears regularly in the schools, I can attest to the triage approach that teachers are being forced to make in order to serve a broad spectrum of talents and needs. There are already too many children to serve all of them effectively. Despite a teacher's best attempt, it is often controlled chaos, and teachers are, in my experience, grateful to have an extra adult in the room. It can truly make the difference between whether a child learns that day or not. Due to the loss of teaching positions, my middle school daughter's classroom size under the recently agreed on budget for the coming year is forecasted to increase to well over 30 students. I don't have precise numbers. I've heard numbers between 35 and 40. Currently, I think there's upper 20s. And it's already pretty crazy in there. And so that's a bigger class, and it also threatens the present middle school model they have at DZ, where they have a team teaching structure that has a proven track record indicated by academic improvement rates and test performance. And this is just bad. There's really no other way to say it. When learning doesn't happen at school, the burden is on the parents to meet their child's academic needs at home. I already spend a great deal of time supporting and extending my kids' learning at home, often on academics that I feel they should be learning at school. But again, I can do this. My educational background and work schedule allows me to do this. Many parents are unable to bolster their child's learning at home. And this speaks just to the struggle to support the status quo, let alone meet critical academic services that are lacking, such as science and math at the elementary level. The importance of our kids, all of our kids' educational success cannot be understated. All of the cliches are true. The children, all of them, are all of our future. As a society and a species, we have some big challenges to overcome, and our success is going to require a healthy, bright, engaged, and prepared population. We will rise or fall together. We sacrifice their potential at our own peril. I emphatically support the BSA increase and legislation to assure forward funding for our schools. Thanks very much.
If you could stay there for a second. Yeah. So right now we just have three more people signed up. We probably have about another half hour. I know I will say that I've asked folks if they feel like other people can speak for them to consider not signing up, just so we can finish the hearing, though if there are folks who feel like they have something that they really want to say, we do have some additional time. Ms. Hendrick, I've got one question mm-hmm. for you. So I've been told by friends of mine, people that I run into, that parents are thinking about whether or not to stay in Alaska because they wonder whether there's a commitment to public education. And I'm just asking you whether you or people you've spoken to have expressed a similar sentiment. I don't want you to exaggerate, obviously.
No. I definitely have parents who have had the experience, friends that have had the experience of, for other reasons, have relocated down south temporarily and have been pretty appalled when they come back with their kids and realize, like, how far ahead they are or how far behind their kids are when they go elsewhere to go to school. And so, yes, I have heard parents talk about, you know, whether it's worth relocating to have a better education for their kids. For me personally, I've gone through my own gyrations within the Juneau School District, trying to find the best fit for my kids, because I do feel that they're underserved in certain ways. I'm not presently considering relocating, mostly, you know, we've been here a long time, and
and financially and job-wise, it's, you know, that would be that would be a burden. But it's not like it's never crossed my mind.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, so we have Martin Steppington next. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then Mark Miller right afterwards. Thank you, Martin. You have somebody with me?
The two of us testifying up here. I just wrote some comments down really quick back there. First of all, thanks for having this bill. This is not my first time testifying on education, and surely not my last. I have four kids of my own and two foster kids. For those legislators who say we need to continue cutting the budget to balance our physical shortfalls, I say, come talk to the folks trying to run our schools or our overloaded and underfunded OCS department, our foster care system. No more cuts, no more flat funding. I always say history will remember those leaders who support our schools. In reality, flat funding is a cut. Flat funding is a cut. As far as teachers go, I say it's sad we're losing teachers, but not just that, teachers as it is don't get paid enough, and Lord knows they deserve a raise. Next year, I will have two kids in eighth grade, two kids in kindergarten, one in first grade, and one in Head Start. Sorry. I've always said I will pay a tax on education. None of us here asking you to raise the BSA can say we're doing everything we can unless we have some skin in the game. Every other state in the union does so. I will pay a tax for our Great Alaska schools. I would support that. Please pass this bill. Please support our kids.
Martin, I appreciate it. Any questions? Representative Guttenberg.
You were here last week, and thank you for that, if I remember right. And I just need to tell you that children that come into this building have a higher propensity to run for office than other children. So I just want to say, being the first one to say hello to the senator.
All right, Martin, you've been warned. So we have Superintendent Miller and then Jeff Short, and I don't see anybody else either on the telephone or in the room who's signed up at this point. Superintendent Miller, you've been colorful in your comments, so we need you to top what you've...
I don't know. We'll see. Dr. Mark Miller, superintendent here in Juneau. I got hired the same month oil went from $100 a barrel to $30 a barrel. I do not take responsibility for that. I don't think that was my fault. And I've really spent the last 4 years trying to cut the budget with a scalpel and not a chainsaw. You know, something to think about, in Juneau, nearly one in five of our students has an IEP, or a special education. That means in the English class with 35 students, seven typically will have an IEP or need extra help. When we budget, even though we start with an $80 million budget, we only really talk about $3 million. The other 77 is already spoken for before we even start discussing the budget. It's the nature of school funding. Very, very little is discretionary. Almost all of it is mandatory. We started out trying to do more with less, and then we went to trying to hold serve, doing the same with less. But now, quite honestly, we're doing less with less. Our middle school study program, study skills, organization, it's gone, avid. Our auto shop at the high school, the only place kids can learn to work on cars, will likely be shuttered next year. Our technology implementation to allow students to do more online collaboration and learning, that program didn't make the cut either. We're probably only going to be able to order 50% of the textbooks we need to implement our curriculum next year. We need help. Not only does this contribution from the state help us, it also allows our local contribution to increase. You've heard that from other districts. The fact of the matter is, by necessity, you've had to shift some of the responsibility that the state has had financially to the local municipalities. It's just the nature of the situation we're in. This allows us to do a little bit better with that. For us, it's $1 million, but when your discretionary fund is only three, that's a significant increase for us, and it would make a huge difference. Thank you so much for your time.
Questions for Superintendent Miller, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Miller, for being here today. Since the time that you've been here in the school district, can you tell me just a little bit about how those cuts have impacted, particularly middle school and high school extracurricular activities?
Oh, absolutely. One of the first things I did when I got here, because we were in such desperate shape, is I cut all funding for high school and middle school travel. So we no longer pay a dime to help our students get out of Juneau to any other school to compete. They have to raise all of that. In Juneau, that's about $3 million a year that we've shifted to the community to fundraise so that we can compete. Because quite honestly, unless you want to compete against the other high school, the only way to get out of here is either on a ferry, and a ferry to Ketchikan means you lose a week of school, or you fly. And so there you have it.
Representative Grant's got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Dr. Miller, in your, well, have qualifications had to be changed in terms of taking applicants for teacher hires? Have you had to change those qualifications? A minimum qualification?
We haven't had to change our qualifications necessarily, but we have had more open positions that we've been unable to fill. And the consequence of that is either the position stays open and we try to fill it with a high school graduate substitute who may or may not show up every day, or we contract some services down south with people who either do it telephonically from Oregon, for example, with and they have to pay their company a cut of that before the money even gets to them. Then, of course, all those dollars go to employees from the lower 48. So those are two different ways that we've had to move around our staff just to try to hold it together. Right now, especially during tourist season, our fill rate for substitutes sometimes can go as low as 50%, which means one out of two of our classrooms that needs a substitute doesn't get one.
What does that do to the quality of the education that students get?
Well, I mean, without being the Department of Redundancy Department, if a kid is sitting in the cafeteria without a teacher staring at the wall instead of being with a teacher who has a master's degree and has been teaching for 20 years, I think the answer to that question goes without saying, sir. Through the chair. I'm sorry, Representative.
And then, Dr. Miller, I've got a couple questions. One, can you give us an estimate of, in recent years, how many teacher and other positions Juneau has had to cut?
Well, I think you heard earlier we cut about 33% administratively and 18% from a teacher perspective.
And then if I could ask you a broader question, and I certainly don't want you to be alarmist, but are we at a point where if funding remains the same, we're going to have an impact on sort of academic achievement, in your view, students' ability to get into college or job training or the things that – any of those things, in your view?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's been clear from all the testimony from my colleagues that we've done the same thing at school districts that you've done in the state. We've cut back as far as we can cut back, and we've burned through every dollar of end fund balance that we have. Our end fund balance this year is likely to be something between $500,000 and $750,000 out of an $80 million budget. That's less than 2 days of school funding that we have in our end fund reserve. We're broke. And all we can do when we're broke is we can cut back on our teachers and cut back on our staff and cut back on our programs and give students less opportunities. If a student wants to learn next year to work on an automobile to eventually go into the automobile trade, and I don't know what they charge you to fix your car, but it's $100 an hour to have mine worked on at a dealership, you'll no longer be able to do that in Juneau School District. So clearly, overloading upper academic classes has the same effect.
I've got one final question that And then Representative Ortiz has a question. So we've heard from a number of school districts that they've gone through the buffer of their reserves. Some school districts haven't, some have. Can we expect that if you've, in your school district, now that you've used the buffer, that future flat funding will have more severe impacts on education?
Absolutely. We did what anybody else would do. We took this, our savings account, or the little bit of savings that we had, and we used it. And now we're there.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going to the topic of teacher recruitment, I remember at the beginning of this year I was hearing that the Juneau School District had some unfilled positions, I think particularly in the area of special education. Did those remain unfilled this year?
I think we ended up with one being filled in the second semester, but I'm sending my special ed director back to Michigan next week, all week, to try to recruit some special ed candidates from the Michigan area to bring them in.
And follow up, Mr. Chairman. And so how many remained unfilled?
Through the chair, I believe that at this point we were able to get all of our positions filled, but many of those went unfilled for the majority of the year.
And one final follow-up. In relationship to federal funding, I know that there's funding that comes through for special needs students. Is there a connection between your ability to have staff, certified staff, in those areas to the level of funding you get, or probably not because of the disconnect that happens between the federal government and the local level? But is there eventually a connection to that?
Well, the federal dollars help us fund more expensive education, which we have for students with special needs. And that's certainly a very important part of our budget, the way this, through the chair. The way we fund in the state for intensive needs students is also extremely critical to what we do. Special ed teachers make the same salary as any other teacher, of course. One of the things that I have seen in my experience is that the severity of the disabilities that we're trying to accommodate continues every year to become more and more severe. We are really trying to educate students that when I started in this game 35 years ago, we wouldn't even have fathomed would be in a public school.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Miller, we have two testifiers left. Just to fully understand the answer to follow up on Representative Ortiz's question, is there anything the state is doing that is making it more difficult to recruit teachers, or is that just a problem that's not going to change?
It's a nationwide problem. For whatever reason, the current generation is simply not going into teaching and doesn't see teaching as a viable profession. I don't know why that is exactly. Salary, I think, probably has something to do with it. The demands that we put on teachers that we did not put on them before, I think, has to do with it. It's a very complex social issue, and we're all working together to try to look at that and grow our own.
Thank you, Dr. Miller. Any more questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very much. We have Jeff Short, and then we have Don Karstens, and I don't see anybody else after that signed up either by telephone or in the room.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for this opportunity to address you today. My name is Jeff Short. I'm a member of the Juneau School Board. I'm also about 45-year resident of Alaska. I came here straight out of college, dead broke, and I've benefited mightily from my life in Alaska. I paid the initial income tax, and I was happy to do it, even with the little frowny face next to this blank. I paid the school tax. I was happy to do that. I'd pay those taxes at a much higher rate today, gladly, if it would pull our education system out of the hole that it's in. Members of the committee, we're desperate. As you've heard, on the Juneau School District deliberations for the budget, we're cutting programs we know are effective, but we don't have the money. We're increasing class sizes to points where we know they're impairing education quality, but we don't have the money. We're at our wit's end. If we don't get the $100 base allocation passed, will go through yet another round of cutting another $1 billion beyond what we've already cut. So I implore you to pass this. I would remind you that we've taken about a 10% cut in effect since 2008 due to inflation, despite the raises in the BSA. And I would close by reminding you that we are not a poor state. We are a state with many tens of billions of dollars in a savings account and almost no taxes. We have lots of options for fixing this. And yet our education system is now ranked near dead last in the country. This is fixable, and as Alaskans, we need to fix it. I am on the school board because I love this state. My two children grew up in the Juneau School District. Our children are our shared future in this state and our shared prosperity. If we don't fix this, we're looking at sustained poverty all the way around. Thank you.
Sure. Can you give us a couple examples? You said that you've been cutting programs that are effective. Can you give us some examples of programs that have been cut that are effective?
Middle school AVID program, we eliminated. It was AVID, Advancement Through Individual Determination, was one program we eliminated. We increased the PTR, pupil to teacher ratio in middle schools to a level now that is ridiculous. We're hoping that we can avoid the worst of that by surgical reallocations of teachers in particular schools, but we're still going to be looking at overcrowded classrooms.
No further questions. Mr. Short, thank you. I think we have a couple other people
thank
who
you.
Signed up. Don Karstens next, and then Amy Lujan.
Chairman, members of the committee, appreciate you having me here. My name is Dan Karstens. I'm president of our Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals. We have a bunch of principals in the room as well, and I hope I can bring a little bit different viewpoint, being in the school. What happens right now is first off, well, let me give you a background. I've lived in the state my whole life, 44 years, born and raised. I'm a product of our public school system, both when times were great and when times weren't so great. And we all made it, but we always had good support of public education. I have five kids, gone through the public education system, and I would not send them anywhere else besides our public schools. And I do believe that our principals are innovators. They make do with what we have, and our system is not broken, but there are definite fissures in it right now, and the continued eroding of our funding is going to make those fissures even greater. As I look at my schedule and as I cut a half of teacher here, a full teacher there, I start moving kids out of some classes and into others, which makes those classes much bigger. I end up having teachers teaching classes that they may not be totally completely qualified for. I'm responsible for hiring every teacher in my building, and as I look at special education, I have two openings right now, and I'm really not sure how I'm going to fill at least one of those. So this $100 to our BSA would go a long way. It would allow us to, as we go through negotiations, value our teachers, value our people in education, and say, "Yep, hey, we know that that there's a lot of a huge burden on you, and we need to offer you something that treats you like the professional that you are." And the stability in a classroom and in a school is hugely important. And I know that's probably my time, isn't it? I could go on forever, however.
I think we'll let you go on a little longer. Our Representative Grant has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. Carson, you're a principal?
Yes, I'm a principal at Nikiski Junior Senior High School for the last 13 years.
So in your 13 years, how would you gauge now versus any other time during that span of the morale of the teachers currently?
Through the chair. I would say because of the culture we have in our school, it's a positive morale. However, the outlook on how they are valued by maybe our public and maybe the people that are giving or allocating dollars is very negative. I see at least down in lower 48, Oklahoma, West Virginia, they're at least going in a positive direction. Their salaries may not be what ours are, but it's also a lot cheaper to live down there. We all know it's very expensive to live here. And like I said, they're at least going in the right direction. I don't want a statewide strike. I don't want our teachers to walk out on our kids. I don't want us to walk out on our kids. And so I would hope that we are at least going to take that step in that right direction.
Yeah, Representative Grundin.
So then outside of salary, if that's not a driver of morale, what is? What's changing the attitude right now?
Stability. And I think if you have a positive leader in every school, an excellent leader in every school, who drives that current culture, that is going to be a morale driver more than anything. Morale killers are, you know, we're not valuing our teachers, and then we're also going to give you 35 kids in a class. And if you've ever seen 35 middle school students or 35 third graders or 35 kindergartens in one class, that's a handful for anybody. I don't care how good of a teacher you are.
Yeah, just a brief one. Thank you for being here, Mr. Karsten. Can you tell me just sort of what a good PTR looks like at the secondary level?
Through the chair. A good PTR at the secondary level gives us probably in the mid-20s for our core classes. I always have about 60 kids that need to take Algebra 1. So what do I do? Do I do two classes of 30 or three classes of 20? And so without the additional BSA, I choose two classes of 30 because that's what my PTR dictates.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the testimony. I think we only have two other people left in the room to testify, Amy Lujan and Ralph Watkins. Let me know if I'm wrong about that.
Good morning. I'm Amy Lujan with the Alaska Association of School Business Officials. And as you've all known or figured out by now, we're here with a fly-in of our colleagues from the Council of School Administrators. And it's just really great to hear the stories from our colleagues and what they're dealing with in their districts. It varies a little bit, you know, if districts have been able to cushion the flat funding with their own fund balances and things like that. And it's great to see how everyone wants to be a team player and want to say, hey, we understand that the state is in a bad fiscal situation here. But I'm also telling them, hey, we need to ask for what we need because this is really important that our kids really need the resources. We can't just sit back and say, hey, we'll take whatever you can give us. Thank you very much. We need to say this is really important. We're not making this investment. You can't go back and take third grade again, I mean, unless you're demoted and held back. I mean, it's just really something that we lose out on with our kids. So this $25 million, basically what $100 in the BSA costs, is a really worthwhile investment. You guys are dealing with, you know, billions in deficits and hundreds of millions here and hundreds of millions there. This $25 million can make a big difference. And if that is not funded, what's going to happen? Everybody's going to go back to school in the fall. People who maybe haven't been paying close enough attention are going to suddenly realize, hey, my kid's in an algebra class of 30. That's really not going to work for that kid. And they're going to start saying, hey, what happened? What didn't I pick up on early enough? And it's going to be quite noticeable in the fall if they're not paying attention right now. So we all share the burden and the frustration of sometimes the public doesn't quite catch on to what they need to know when they need to know it. But we're here to tell you that it is going to have consequences. It is having consequences that schools have been underfunded. We can't keep up with the cost increases without some additional help in the BSA, and we really need it. It will make a difference. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I appreciate the testimony. We have Ralph Watkins. And if there's anybody else in the room who wants to testify, just stand up. But I think that's all we have signed up, and I don't see anybody else online. So we've got one more person afterwards. Okay. Mr. Watkins.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ralph Watkins. I'm the superintendent of schools in Hoonah, Alaska. This is my first time testifying. I was a little reluctant to testify because we talk about telling our stories, and I have the same story as everyone else, so what difference is my story going to make? Well, I was compelled to testify because not only am I the superintendent, I am the principal. Not only am I the principal, I am the technology director. Not only am I the superintendent, principal, technology director, I'm also the middle school teacher. I'm tired. Not only that, I also have three children in my school, and I assure you 100% I would not subject them to a subpar education. It's too important. It's too important. And so every day I get up and I do all of those things because I'm committed to making sure that the students of Hoonah receive an excellent education, just like I know every superintendent and principal behind me are, just like I know every one of you are. So what do? We fund education. We pass the retire rehire bill. We do everything possible, like me, to make it happen. We can't do anything else. It's too important. And so in Hoonah, we are combining classes. We have kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. Our sixth grade has moved into middle school. This is unsustainable. There are 27 kids in my second, third grade classroom with a standard deviation of 24. I have one teacher, no aides, in a classroom where there are literally two classrooms. That's not sustainable. If we are committed, like the Education Challenge, to ensure that all students are at grade level by third grade, then I can't have a 2-3 classroom. It doesn't work. But I don't have the money to hire another teacher. We lost a teacher last year that we couldn't fill that position. We went all year with no special education teacher. We have a 33% special ed population. So I encourage you to pass this bill. I encourage you to pass the retire rehire. I encourage you to do whatever you have to do to make this work because education is too important. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins. We've got a question from Representative Wilson.
Thank you. And just quickly on the retire rehire, would that have allowed you to be able to have filled that special education? Is that what you were telling us?
Absolutely. In Hoonah, Hoonah is a beautiful place. We have 15 retired teachers that live in Hoonah that have taught in Hoonah for over 20 years, and they would love to come back and teach. And so, yes, that would have allowed us to fill that position. It would have also allowed us to fill the middle school position, which would have been great.
So I think it's probably a good bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Watkins?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins, for your testimony. And the history of the position of the superintendent, is it a relatively new thing that the superintendent is also the principal and then also has teaching responsibilities?
Through the chair. It's new. In Alaska right now, we have four superintendent principals that I'm aware of, and none of them are teaching. So that was just out of necessity.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Watkins.
Thank you.
We have two more people, one on the off-net, one here in the room. And so let's go to Thomas Claymeyer, calling in from Anchorage. If you could put yourself on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hello, my name is Tom Claymeyer. I am a 20-year teacher in Anchorage School District, currently serving right now as a full-time release president of the Anchorage Education Association. And seeing as though most teachers are in school, they're unable to testify today, and so I'd like to speak on their behalf, and I'd like to thank the legislature for the work that they're doing. It's no mean task, considering the times, but I'm thankful that the economics of the state seem to be improving, and I'm hopeful that that will allow you to be able to increase the BSA in order to no longer flat fund education, which we've been forced to do the last several years, and try to make up some of those losses. Kids are suffering. They're losing electives. They're losing educational opportunities. In Anchorage, we're cutting tutors, we're cutting teachers, we're cutting administrators, counselors, all of those things that are necessary for the well-rounded education of students to help them in the classroom and out. So far already we have three times the number of our own members leaving so far that we had at the same time last year that are either resigning or retiring. Because it's the job has become more than they can bear. Many of my members say, you know, I've got 5 good years left in me, but I can't deal with it anymore. You know, if it were just the kids, if it were just teaching, but it's all of the other stuff, the budget cutting, it's wearing on everybody. We've got classes of 30 elementary kids or 35 or more in the secondary level. Our ability to do our jobs, educating kids, giving them the education that they deserve, becomes that much more difficult. Job opportunities outside are increasing as the economy in the lower 48 is booming. So, you know, grass is greener kind of thing. And I'm hoping to do the best that I'm hoping that you will help us do the best we can in Anchorage, retain those quality educators, attract new ones, and be able to offer kids the personal education that they deserve, to be able to inspire them, to give them that personalized attention, and offer dynamic, rich educational opportunities that they all deserve. In addition, early funding of education would also provide stability for especially those newer teachers that always seem to be on the bubble of possibly being laid off as a result of position cuts or reduction in force caused by the budget. When you're a new educator, often some of the most difficult years anyways, but when you're stressed financially about being laid off, you've got student loans, you've got family to care for, you've got mortgage or rent, and people now are experiencing this 2 or 3 or 4 years in a row, that kind of instability also aid in their decision to look elsewhere, to look for a more stable retirement, to look for a place where they can at least have the stability of knowing that they're going to have a job next year. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate the ability to testify on their behalf.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Claymire. Do we have any questions, Representative Seaton?
Thank you. Mr. Claymire, is the Anchorage Education Association looking at or doing what the Kenai Peninsula Education Association is doing with the travel for medical options? In other words, any specialty care goes out to bid to the network, and then the folks are routed to those that, you know, have high quality but have lower prices, and is the Anchorage Education Association doing that or investigating that same healthcare cost saving mechanism?
So, thank you for the question, through the chair. Our members are receive their health insurance through the Public Education Health Trust, and in fact, we've been doing many of those things for a long time. We participate in Bridge Health, which is a program. Such as the one you're referring to, where you're able to get that quality care outside. And then when you come back in the state, they've contracted with primary care associates to get the aftercare here that would normally be provided as follow-up to surgery, those sorts of things. We also participate in a program called Teladoc for minor things, colds, flus, that sort of thing. You can call in, and if they're able to assess over the phone, then that's also another way to reduce care. We also participate in the Aetna network with preferred providers, negotiating lower rates as long as they stay in the network. We're also the Public Education Health Trust has also initiated a wellness program, participating in one called Go 365. that offers incentives for members who are seeking to proactively reduce their own healthcare incidents by living healthier lifestyles, exercising more, those sorts of things. So it's kind of a, you know, some of the stick, and then in this case, a little bit of the carrot to help bring those costs down. In fact, I'm pleased to say that many of the programs that our members participate in through the Public Education Health Trust are also being adopted by the Anchorage School District for the other employees, and they're making those kinds of benefits available in order to bring those costs. Yeah.
Representative Seaton.
And just very quickly, I was wondering if you have any report of the success or the cost savings on that program that could be publicly shared. We would sure like to receive that here in House Finance. So if that something like that's available, sure like to get an analysis of that. Thank you.
I'll talk to the Public Education Health Trust and see if they can make that information available to you. I only have anecdotal evidence of the types of stories that come out of it from members, but I'll make sure that the Public Education Health Trust provides that for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Claymire, for your testimony. And the last person I have on the list here is Mary McMahon. If you could put yourself on the record, your name and your affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Mary McMahon. I am the immediate past president for the Alaska Council of School Administrators and the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals. Born and raised in Alaska from Kodiak originally, I'm currently living in Palmer. I've been in education for 20 years. And I am just really concerned about the turnover rates in Alaska. When I first started working and teaching in Alaska, the job fair was standing room only at the Captain Cook. I couldn't even get an interview with the rural school districts unless I had something special to offer. And I did. I was also a basketball coach, so they took me. And but now you go to the job fair, and it's hard to even find anyone interested in public education. And it just breaks my heart because this is that it's such an incredible profession, and we have such outstanding leaders here in unity, to say, in desperate unity to say we've got to invest in the future of our country, and we've got to say our kids deserve more. And there are wonderful things happening. I'm committed to the excellence in school leadership throughout the state, and every single, I worked in rural Alaska in Chivac and Kotzebue, and I am committed to all of the kids in the state of Alaska, and it really takes us coming together. We the people, I love what the commissioner said, we the people can solve this problem together. And so I just really hope that we can realize the power and the future of what we have in our state that I love. I love Alaska. And we all love Alaska, and so we've got to come together and realize that public education is in a desperate place, and we need to come together in support of education. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McMahon. Other Representative Guerra?
Thank you. Mary, really quickly, and though I want to note, we tried to keep the number of testifiers down. Lisa Parity is in Juneau, so if folks have questions for her, she'll be around, and she refrained from testifying. Ms. McMahon, just on the lack of prospective teachers at job fairs, do you think the level of commitment the state has been showing to education, I would say not great commitment, but do you think that has any impact on whether people are showing up at job fairs to come up to Alaska?
Absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. I mean, we have shown that we, with our actions, that we don't place as much value on education, and less people are going into it. My son was going to go into education, and he chose to go a different route, and that breaks my heart because I think that he's going to have the most meaningful life if he chooses education as his career.
Great. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And we've got to be on the floor here in a few minutes, and so we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. I do have an amendments deadline for 9 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, April 11th. We will revisit that if we need to. It is kind of fast, but if anybody does have amendments or thinking about it, if they could let me know, and if we need a little more time, maybe we can work around that. But we will be meeting again at 1:30 p.m. today, Tuesday, April 10th. And at this meeting, we will hear 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bills, HB 306, Purchasers Distributions, HB 385, Enhanced 911, SB 107, Alaska Capital Income Fund, SB 97, Pension Obligation Bonds, and HB 316, which is Restrict Access Marijuana Crime Records. So with that, we will be gaveled out at 10, Representative Seaton. Oh, I'm sorry. And I don't believe anybody else was wanting to testify on HB 339. And I don't see anybody, so we will close public testimony on HB 339. And with that, we will also be adjourned at 10:53 a.m. Thank you.